Shields design is about making truly good design accessible to everyone. And by truly good design, I mean design that actually hears you, knows who you are and what you have to work with, and makes a space that allows you to be your truest self in that space.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Finishing School Podcast, a discussion with and for women about identity, transitions through life stages, how to figure out who you want to be when you grow up, and all the things we didn't learn about in school. In short, it's a sometimes spiritual, sometimes silly look at how to be a grown woman. Whether you're becoming a mom for the first time or about to be an empty nester, modern womanhood and motherhood is complex, and the questions and conflicts we face with shifting roles and desires are many. Don't have your midlife crisis alone. Join me. I'm your host, Jessica Euler, and I'm stewarding this conversation on the brink of asking many of these questions in my own life. As my kids get older, my role as a mother changes, and as I have more time to reflect on who I am in the world, I'm surrounded by friends in the same boat. And I know if we're talking about these issues, odds are you are too.
Hello there. Oh, it's been a while, and there's good reason for that. It's been a rough transition into fall. I know I'm not the only one who was sort of blindsided by this, lack of capacity that just seemed to like come out of nowhere and just hit me. But I'm slowly emerging from the fog, and I do want to talk about that more, because as I've been listening and reading, I know I'm not alone. I know that there are so many of us who are just struggling with mental health, struggling with just that sense of that vague sense of despair. Even though things seem like they might be getting better, or are they? Just the ambiguity of what's happening and how long we've been in this pandemic, and all the uncertainty. So anyway, I really want to have that conversation. But today, I can't wait to introduce you to my dear friend, Tori Fields. She is a creative force in so many realms. Her own art, fashion. She's an amazing clothes designer and seamstress, food design. So on this episode, we talk a lot about her journey back to her creative self after staying home and raising kids. And you know that that is a story that I want to hear more of from women, about the choices they make as they emerge from a season of choosing to stay home and raise children, and what that looks like, what obstacles they face, what questions they have, how do you shape that next season of your life. So her passion and her vision at this season in her life and the work that she's moving toward is all about making good design accessible for everyone. And what I think is the most interesting part of the conversation is why that is important and why that even matters. Tori has a degree in interior design, and she has a new business, which if you're local, you'll definitely want to know about. We all have limitations in our homes and things that aren't working for our families and the way that we live. And Tori is the one that you can call to help. And she will help you find a great solution and a beautiful solution. So have a listen, and you'll hear us talk about why we think design is important.
Okay. Hi, Tori.
Hi, Jessica.
So nice to see you. In person. You're my first in-person recording in, 2 years.
Well, that makes sense, because I've been all up in your home working on your kitchen remodel.
Yes.
And consulting about paint colors and hydrangeas, or not hydrangeas. What's that plant? The camellia.
Oh, the camellia. Oh, it's gone.
It's gone.
Have you seen it?
Yes.
It looks so good out there.
It's so much better.
Yeah, it is. And the dogwood is going to be so pretty.
Yeah.
And all the little plants are really happy out there.
Yeah, I love being in this home that you have.
Oh, thank you.
Even though
it's
in process.
It's very in process, but it still feels good.
I love that.
Everything's in process, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, speaking of process, I want to talk about, let's take our little time machine back a couple years, and I just have flashbacks to you and me and Lisa working out at the track and talking about like, okay, all our kids are in school. Now what? What do we do? Like, what do we do with this time? Who are we? How do we figure out what's next? Do we go back to the people that we were before kids? Do we, like, is that woman still in there, or are we new women entirely? And what about career-wise and our time? And so can you kind of get back into that headspace and think about what that was like and some of the questions that you were asking?
Yeah. So I had a, you know, I got a degree in interior design, and I'd wanted to do interior design my whole life. And my dad was an architect. I grew up in his office. So it just, that was a goal of mine from early, early life. And got the degree, and I worked professionally for just under 3 years before having my first kid. And at that time in my life, my husband and I decided staying home was the right thing for me. And I didn't have a plan of getting back into the profession at all. I had ideas for ways to work, you know, in these creative hands-on endeavors, not in a professional capacity in design. And I loved that idea, but the reality of having children, the children I had anyway, and my setup, just didn't work at all. So yeah, I find myself at home, and they go back to school or go into school. And those first, you know, it's not just one day when they go to kindergarten. I have two kids. So it's the slow process of, okay, it's coming. And I just felt like I was on the cusp of something for a long time. I'm the cusp of making a new decision. And I just didn't know what that was. I felt very confused and conflicted. And I think a part of that is that I have a very strong dichotomy in my personality. I have a rule following type A. What's the structure? Just tell me what you expect and I'm going to get 100%. And the other side is like, let's paint our feelings and what's around that corner. And I love alleys and let's look in the, you know, like it's just
underside of things.
Yeah. Just unexpected. All the, And so these two sides of me, you know, have always come out to play in different scenarios, but the rule following side is very much a bully, I would say.
Oh, and that's so good to know.
Yeah. This is, I mean, this is hindsight. Now that I'm at the wizened age of 40, I'm coming back and seeing that. But yeah, so at this time when I'm looking at my future, my prospects and what I'm doing, the type A side is saying, well, obviously you get back into the design profession and you have your degree and, you know, put on your big girl professional gray slacks or whatever and get out there and interview and get a job. And I was very like stymied in that place for a long time because I didn't want to. So the rule side is saying, well, this is what you're supposed to do. This is the, you know, you have your degree, you took your time off, now you get back in. And the creative freewheeling side is saying, that just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like it's giving me life. And after raising human beings, you know, you really don't want to be under some other boss. Like you're the boss, you know, I know how to do all the things. Like, I mean, I don't, but it just was not appealing. So I was stuck there for a long time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the pandemic year that I kind of decided, well, so backing up, 2019, believe it or not, was a more emotionally like intense year for me in my personal life. So by the time we got to 2020, I'm like, like it was hard, but that the emotional like crux of everything kind of came to a head in 2019. And part of that was realizing that rule side of me, the type A side, hasn't always done me a lot of favors and it's not always working out. Mm-hmm. And that wild side really needed to come out, and it came out in art. And I was really fed in that way and really inspired, like, ooh, I could listen to this side more. And this side has something to offer. And I love living into that creative side of me and not having rules and just going with my intuition.
Yeah.
For whatever I want. So come 2020, I just like all of a sudden got an opportunity to do the SpaceWorks Tacoma business cohort planning group in the in the winter. And I just all of a sudden decided, you know what, I'm just going to go for it. Because I kind of, it just all came to a head. I realized, you know what, I have all these skills and I can apply them how I want to. I don't need to do the regular professional, just being a professional interior designer thing. And I can actually make my own business and follow my own set of things that I'm passionate about and my skills and my experience and create a business out of that and move forward with that. That was really, really liberating and really hard. It's actually probably a lot harder than putting on those boring gray slacks and doing an interview and getting a job.
And doing what someone else tells you to
And
all
just
day.
Doing what someone else tells you yeah. to do. And
yeah.
You know, when you're, you know, I was nearly 40 at this time. Like, man, what's so hard when you choose to stay at home is you can't just if you jump back in, you're jumping back into where you were when you were 20, what, something. Six or
yeah.
something?
Yeah.
What was exactly. I, 27 maybe when I left the professional world? And I just...
And you're not the same person
anymore. I'm not
anymore.
The same person. And maybe it's pride. Needs.
I mean, you have better skills.
I have better skills, but like those professional skills.
But do they
skills,
translate?
Like AutoCAD and yeah. how to like do a spreadsheet yeah. and all this. Like I would be all the way back to entry level
yeah.
design.
No, that sounds terrible.
And, you know, it was just really a big debate, like,
yeah.
you know, do I just humble myself and stick in there, you know, jump back in, give it a few years and, you know, see, hope that they will see my abilities and, you know, move me up to where I can make more creative decisions. Or do I just say I'm worth it now? And I know my creative voice and I can choose into confidence into that and just go forth. And start out exactly where I want to start out instead of going backwards, it feels like.
Yeah.
So the SpaceWorks program was really, really helpful for that. Just helping you set up like how you move forward with the business, how you set it up well so that you know what you're about and why and how to structure what you're doing around your why and stay on top of the boring things and all that. So I'm set up with that. And yeah, I'm just in the early phases of launching this thing that, I don't know if that answered your question.
But
2 years ago, I felt like I was on the cusp of something. And it turns out what it was just letting my creative side come out to play more and speak up more clearly.
I love that. And I'm so glad you did. And you are. And
it's like an everyday choice, honestly. Like every day I could be... Like today, even this morning, I'm having my coffee and the rural side is like, write a to-do list. You know, what is everything you need to do today?
I know.
And the wild side is like, you know what? Just do what you feel like you
right
need. Like I'm
moment.
A really productive person, actually.
Yeah.
And I could just trust that and be like, I'm not going to just sit and watch TV all day. I don't need to write a to-do list to be productive at the end of the day. And I can just go with what my gut or what my energy level is feeling like I can do.
Yeah.
Out of any number of tasks I'm holding in my mind at any moment in time of the things I know that are out there to do.
Yeah.
Just follow my intuition for each day and do the things that feel the right, like the right task for me at that time.
Oh my gosh. That is honestly, that's been the biggest struggle for me this last year. And I think so much of it is the pandemic, right? And like what our nervous systems have been through and the, you know, the unseen, you know, constant threat, the mental load, and then like carrying the mental load of our families and our household and the uncertainty and all of that. So it makes it really hard. It has felt super hard for me to focus. And, you know, even if I have a to-do list, it's like, well, that's out the window by 10 because someone's having an emotional meltdown or I'm having an emotional meltdown.
Yeah, exactly.
Or I just like the energy's not there. I don't feel like it. But I can so relate to that, like that almost dualism within yourself of, you know, wanting to be the like really productive and organized, like on Tuesdays I do this at 10 o'clock and on Thursdays I do this at 11 and like all the tasks have a place because it makes me feel like I'm going to get done the things that are really important to me that align with my values.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to that day, I'm like,
yeah,
I don't, you know, I'm going to go for a swim.
Yeah.
I'm going to run and then I'm going to walk for an hour and, you know, or I run into a friend and we have coffee or, you know, just having that freedom.
Yes.
There's like room for creativity and play, but then it is tricky because you do need to get the things done. And
the price of that freedom often in my brain is, oh, but remember how you said, or you were trying to prioritize, you know, transplanting that hydrangea that's not doing well in your front yard or whatever.
Right.
You're like, oh, I chose to paint the bathroom.
Yeah.
But really I was trying. Remember, I set my intention on fixing that thing in the front yard. And so it's like I choose into freedom and I'm doing the bathroom. And the price of that is this like guilt. It's that other side of my brain saying, oh, but you said this. So
that
I've actually
like
found myself.
Should.
It's a lot of shoulds. And I've just found myself saying, you know, you're doing the right thing right now. You're in the right place right now.
Yeah.
A lot. That's like just so anywhere, because I guess it's an anxiety of just like, oh, there's so many things to do.
Yes.
And I can only choose one thing at a time. And that's okay.
Yeah.
So you're in the right place at the right time. Like, I'm doing the right thing right now.
I love that.
I have to tell myself that.
I often have to tell myself that because without, you know, being my own boss, and I'm sure you're discovering this, like, there are a million things I could do every day. Mm-hmm. I don't always know what the right thing to do is. You know, do I do something that like refreshes me creatively and has nothing to do with like, you know, making money or like building my business?
Right.
Or do I spend the day, you know, working on marketing or like my email list or writing a newsletter or something?
Yeah.
You know, and it comes down to, yeah. And I think you have to kind of figure out like, what is the criteria for yourself personally to make those decisions? So like, what's the rubric? Is it productivity or is it what feels right for you in the moment? And I think after this year and 2019, because we both had a really wow 2019.
It was a tumultuous year.
Yeah. 2020 was a lot better emotionally
in so many ways. It's so weird.
I know. But I mean, I feel like that tumultuous 2019 and the work that we did really laid the groundwork for like, okay, 2020, like we can handle this, you know, at least like in our families.
Yeah.
What was I saying about that though? Like just, it's almost just grace and kindness to ourselves to say, like, I'm just going to choose what feels right now. Like if I want to sit on my porch and look at ships and, you know, stare at the water or read for 2 hours, like that's
And to trust
great.
That's actually
what you need.
It's maybe not productive, but I want to say it's productive at the soul level.
Right.
You
exactly.
need to give your soul some space.
Yeah.
That's the only way it will produce beautiful things.
That's true.
So staring at ships with a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, can I come over and do that?
You can. The porch is open. Or the upper balcony.
Yes.
Or the courtyard.
Yes.
Or the back patio. Take your pick. All these lovely spaces.
Lovely.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that's ultimately what you're describing is like, what I'm trying to lean into more in my spirituality is a very contemplative path instead of the way that I was discipled into following Jesus was like, here's the checklist of things that you're supposed to do every day. You're supposed to read, you're supposed to pray this way. Here's a little formula.
Mm-hmm.
And it was meant as like a guiding framework, but it became internally a checklist and a legalism and like, if I'm going to connect with God, this is how I have to do it.
Here's the script. Yeah.
Here's the boxes you check. And contemplative spirituality is so much more what you're describing. You know, it's just sitting. It doesn't always look productive. It's not like working through a Bible passage or whatever, you know, like fill in the blanks. It's intuitive. It's listening to the spirit. It's sometimes just sitting and being silent and trusting that like, that's a spiritual holy act.
Yeah.
If you do it unto God before God and remember that like, as we are gazing at God, God is gazing at us and like, that's enough. It doesn't have to feel like I'm doing something, you know?
Right.
So I think that overflows into all different parts of life.
Totally. Yeah. I've had to lean into that more, just being open to the present and asking what is here for me now?
Yeah.
Because of getting our new dog and how golly, she just likes to have a little adventure before she picks a place to poop. And it'll take many minutes. And there's laying down and there's eating grass and then there's sniffing around. There's all these things. And it's 6 a.m. or
Your dog is so good for you.
I know.
Your dog is teaching you
lessons. Because I'm like, you know, I always have three things that are actively happening into my time, you know, like, and then dog needs to go out. And so we go out and it's,
And then you just have
myself
to pause.
To say, okay, what is here for me now in my same old front yard and the same old view of my neighbor's house?
Yeah.
Same old everything, but what's actually here for me now? What's up in the sky? What's that sound? What kind of bird is that? I want, you know, like,
yeah.
it's It's really good.
It's kind of like having a baby and how when you're with a newborn, you are forced to be in the present moment and in the needs of the moment. You can't plan an hour ahead, 2 hours ahead. You just are like, oh, okay. Like right now it's time to eat.
Yes.
Right now you need a new diaper. Like that's what I'm doing right now. I thought I might be doing something else, but I'm not. Yeah. And I'm just going to be here in this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I want to get back to, so this journey and all these questions and leaning into your listening to that creative voice more, which I just am so proud of you. And I have seen, and I affirm in so many ways.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I think it's just so much kinder and truer. Mm. Where have you ended up, and tell us about Level Fields Design and how that all came about and what your take is.
Yeah. Okay. So the Space Works program helped me come up with even that name and just formulating it to what I wanted it to be. I mean, I entered into the program with I want to do interior design, but I also really want to genuinely help people. with my dichotomy, that's always been. I mean, in college, I had 3 different majors until I finally came back to interior design. And I took a year off and went to Nepal. There's that side of me, the creative side wants to just roll up my sleeves and really is willing to wade into some dirt and some mess and really want to touch people's lives and experience another person and help them and just get involved. And the other side is couture, and I love, fine cuisine. I would spend all my money on, art from local artists on my wall. It just is all the things. So again, those two sides have always battled each other. But I came back to interior design way back in my timeline because of a faith I had that if God gave me that passion and that interest, that he would use it to do good in the world. And as much as that faith has changed a lot over the years, that's still the case. Yeah. And so I entered into SpaceWorks just kind of knowing that, and I don't know. And then over the course of the program, just refining. And I have more refining to do, absolutely. But Level Fields Design, my friend came up with that name actually, and I have much gratitude because it's perfect.
Yeah, it is.
It's about bringing good design down off the top shelf. Of course there's top shelf liquor and it's great. And there's a place for that. There's top shelf design and there's a place for that. And it's great. But I really want to bring it down off the top shelf and make it available and accessible to anyone and to everyone. And my grand vision is truly anyone. Can I get grants? Can I work with organizations to do design work for the places that are neglected and left behind or no one even thinks about? Because, we're in those spaces where we're really trying to meet the gritty needs of humanity. Mm-hmm. No one is thinking about what does this space feel like to us who work here or those who come in here for the help. I would love to get in those spaces and make them generous and warm and welcoming to those who are truly in need. And so that's kind of the bigger term. There's a lot of building blocks to get to there. But in the meantime, just looking at, focusing on residential home renovations. This is what I know. I've been doing it unofficially for several years. And offering it at price points and offering it in design packages. So that it's just more approachable. You can go on my website when it's done and see my kitchen is 250 square feet and there's a package for, 3 meetings and some design ideas that costs X amount of dollars. And of course things might wiggle and change, but I just want to be really upright and forthcoming with it. Cause I think that's a huge part of the elitism of the design industry it's just tailored towards people that just have a lot of money. And so,
and don't even have to ask how much.
And don't have to ask and aren't really worried about it. Right.
Yeah.
And so many of the interior designers, I don't even know, you just ask them to come to your home and then it's just this idea of okay, you're going to do everything for me, I guess. Right. And I'll just write you a check decisions. When you tell me to.
Yeah.
And that's really intimidating for someone in the middle class. It's intimidating to me. It's not accessible. I need to know. And then you feel weird asking, how much do you charge hourly and how many hours do you think it's going to take?
It's usually not even hourly. It's usually a straight 30% upcharge on all the things.
All the things. That's the thing. They usually, interior designers charge based on like the markup, the things they're selling you. They're going to sell you the lamp. They're going to sell you the chairs. Mm-hmm. And I have no interest in that. And so that's one of those things. That's one of those things that stymied me earlier on, is that I just fell into that stereotype about an interior designer. Is that that's
and
what
you
they
didn't
are.
Want to be
and I did not want to do that. I don't want to shop for people. I don't want to tell them what lamp to put in their house. Okay,
I'll do that part.
Exactly. And that's a good thing. That's great. But honestly, the type of work I like to do is with the space itself. I want to work with new home buyers or people, middle class families that are growing and they just need to figure out how to make their bathroom work for more kids. And it's a limited budget, but it's like, how can we make
this
space really work for us?
Yeah.
And
within the constraints of like this house, this budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I know that ultimately interior design is the right thing for me with that dichotomy because of my personality, like I was saying earlier, because you need the side that's like practical, like, well, what's a load bearing wall? And, you know, what's the
can't rip it out
budget? And we can't put a vent through here because we've got a light and the thing. You need all of that, but you also need the listening and you need to really like have the empathy and engage with the human beings in the space and hear what they're saying or not saying and ask the right questions to figure out like, well, what is the heart of the space? Like, why are we doing this? What is it for?
Yeah. What is it for?
Yeah. And so I think those are the two sides coming together to work really well. So in the end, I think my dichotomy works, but
yeah, I think so.
So level fields design is about making truly good design accessible to everyone. And by truly good design, I mean design that actually hears you, knows who you are and what you have to work with, and makes a space that allows you to be your truest self in that space.
Yeah. Do you think you're talking more about, I know you're talking about the whole picture, but are you talking more about function and feeling over like finishes and colors and textures and looks?
Yeah.
I know that you're good at that.
Yeah. And all of that's important. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like to start there with like, what is it that you need out of this space? Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about your kitchen. Great. Are you a cook? You know, it's just as simple as that. Yeah. Like, do you like to cook?
Is this going to be functional or just pretty?
Yeah. Do you have people over? Like, do you cook when people are over? Like just all these things. Do you have a lot of, you know, I don't know. Can't think of
collections or
collections. You know, I don't cook, but I love to collect plates. Okay, so we gotta work on that. So, I just recently was with some clients and getting started on their kitchen remodel, and I was like, if you can remember back before the pandemic when people could come in your house, did you like to have people in your kitchen? You know, like was that a big? Because that's I find that people always congregate in the kitchen, whether it's easy or comfortable to do so or
it
not.
Doesn't
like
matter.
It's just going to happen.
Just,
but. But yeah, that functionality piece, that's my jam. I just love working on the floor plan for hours to get it right.
And you're so good at it. And I mean, honestly, you're helping us with our kitchen plan and the layout, and I'm digging into
the finishes
and the colors and the textures and all of that. But, you know, one of the first things that you suggest, the biggest change, I think, that you suggested was, which of course makes absolute perfect sense. And we hadn't really gotten that far yet. We hadn't really thought about it, was opening up a doorway between the kitchen and the dining room.
Yeah.
Duh, because we don't have servants and we use that space. And then, but part of the reason you suggested that was because you said,
I've been to many Euler parties
and the flow between the kitchen and the dining room. And like, you know how we love to entertain and have tons of people and like, that totally makes sense to have the kitchen and the dining room feel like one space. And I think that's so good to start with those kind of questions. I want to mention when you were talking about, you know, making design accessible and how it's, you know, how you feel it's important for everyone, really. I want you to talk a little bit more about why you think that your home and the design of your home shapes your life, but it also brought to mind, in some sense, you know, the whole broken windows theory and how, you know, like how that's related, like it's a kind of a social issue. And I know this isn't exactly design, but, I was just listening to a podcast by Pastor Eric Jacobson, who lives like just down the street. And he has a really great podcast called The Embedded Church. And his focus of study is all about,
like the design of cities and how that affects us. And, but they were talking about, I can't remember the exact, social phrase, but, essentially there's like a piece that comes before the broken windows theory. Like if it's like neglected spaces, when spaces are neglected and not taken care of and run down, that actually has an effect on the overall perception of an area and neighborhood, and it affects the behavior and like the crime rate. And, you know, so it's all kind of connected, because I think it does something to our souls. I think it speaks about, it speaks either a truth or a lack of beauty and order and the things that we were created to like crave, you know, like this sense of shalom, this sense of like, things are right, things are good, we are prospering as a whole, as a neighborhood, as a block, as a community, as a city, you know. And so when you get down to like this granular level inside of our homes, and then extending even beyond into our yards, and like, are those inviting spaces? Are those beautiful spaces for us to enjoy, but then also for our neighbors and passersby? And, you know, and then there's kind of this ripple effect. And it's just so fascinating to me how it's design inside of our homes. And of course, there's like so many layers to it, right? Like you could be over the top, totally high end, like spend gobs and gobs of money. There's no end to how much you could spend inside your home. But we're just talking about like even intentional thinking about how our homes function and how that affects the way we live. And I want you to talk about that a little bit.
Okay. I mean, you said it all right there, but I agree with all of that. Our home is, it ought to be the place where our truest selves can come out and let our hair down and exist. And I think too many times we're not intentional about that. So you aren't seeing how your home is actually what's the word? You can edit out long pauses, right? Our homes sometimes force us to contort into them. And so that's what I love to fix, right? And it should be a space where you get to be all that you want to be, and it brings out the best in you. And as such, it should also be a place of kindness and generosity, I think, in our homes. And in order to be that for us, we have to give it attention. I mean, I think about my own home, and I've said this to my family a few times, like, my home is me. Like, if you want to get me, like, getting me a new kitchen sink for Christmas is a great gift for me, actually. Yeah. There's just something, or if I see my kids or my husband, like, doing something to take care of my home, like, I feel taken care of. Like, my home just is me. And I probably take it to extremes because I'm an interior designer or whatever, but I just think that's true of everyone. So if you go into someone's home and it's just like neglected, or there's no plants, there's no color, like
everything's beige,
like, that's fine. That person is putting their attention somewhere else, obviously, but is that their truest selves? Like, they would really come alive if we could have a conversation and figure out, like, man, what do you need? Like, what makes you feel supported, encouraged? Like, what's your daily routine? Do you have a daily routine? Maybe you had a space for it. Would you like to get out of bed and just sit somewhere with your cup of coffee?
Yeah.
Like, some, you know, you might not have anything like that, but if you think about it, I would. And that's a kindness to yourself. Like, think about those things. What do you need? It doesn't take any money. Maybe it means moving a chair from here to there.
Okay. So when a home doesn't reflect a person and their personality, their interests, I think, you know, a lot of times people can feel intimidated or just afraid and not knowing where to start. What do you think causes people to feel stuck? Like, they know this house doesn't represent me. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel how I want it to feel. I mean, obviously money can be a factor, but you and I both know that creativity can overcome a huge lack of money.
Yeah.
But yeah, how do you start if you feel like, I don't know where to, I don't know where to start?
Yeah. Just having a friend or someone that you hire, like myself, to start that conversation, to ask those questions, you know, having another person there just creates that creative space and maybe a safe place to talk about it. And just gets those thoughts flowing, I think. It's really, if you feel stuck like that, it's really important to just get another mind in there to look at the space and to see it in a new perspective and to give you some feedback. Like, you know, when I am in this space, I see, you know, I've been able to tell this to clients, I see that you love color, actually. I see your walls are white, but I'm seeing this here, I'm seeing this here, you know, and just kind of that encouragement from that outside perspective, I think really, really helps. And asking the right questions of yourself. And then something I have to tell my own self too, to get over the fear of just making a choice is that, and other people I know.
Like someone who might have 20 colors on their wall yeah. to decide?
Every time I come
Someone like that? There's more. Someone like me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's everybody.
There's no wrong decision. Is that what you're going to say?
I just love this idea of prototyping. Like do something. You know, if you can't even afford a gallon of paint, okay, maybe that's different. You really want to be wise about what you're choosing, but it's, you know, but if you can, like, buy a quart and paint a wall and see how it goes, you know, like, yeah. And, or if it's all terrible, you can repaint it or
yeah.
you can return the item or, you know, but like, just, you have to just maybe feel your way through it and trust your gut.
Yeah.
And yeah, don't be afraid. Like, I think a lot of fear in the design world, or people seeking design, is this idea that you have to measure up to some kind of standard, which mm-hmm. is another reason I'm passionate about what I'm doing with Level Fields Design. It's just like, let's take out this like slick, styled to perfection image of interior design.
Right.
I think that totally stagnates people.
Oh,
I look around my house and it's nothing like that. How do I get it from here to there? No, that's not good design. Good design is when it serves you and it comes authentically from you. So, so don't be afraid, you know, just,
take a step.
And you can always undo it. You can always change it. I've repainted stuff in my house so many times.
I think what overwhelms me sometimes, as you get to witness often, is it's not that I'm necessarily afraid to make a decision or do something, try something. It's that there are so many different things. There's so many possibilities. Like my living room, for example, you know, I just painted that twice. And... you know, it's like, okay, how do I want this room to feel? What are the elements I'm working with? What is our family going to do here?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to keep that framework in mind. But then, you know, within that, it's like, well, I could paint it something like dark and saturated and make it feel cozy and moody right. because this is a room that we're often in the evening watching TV or movies. But then it has this ridiculously huge window that overlooks the water. And so I want to keep that airy feel, you know.
Yeah.
So there's so many options that there's so many directions I could go that it's sort of like, well, I don't know which is the right one. And at some point you just decide and then try it and live with it.
Yeah, decide and try it. Like, you could have bought a quart and painted one whole wall a really dark color and just, you know, gotten a feel for it. You could have done that.
It's true.
It just takes time, you know.
Yeah.
You either make a quick decision and you do it quick, or you know, spend time and sit with it.
Yeah. I think I'm someone who has to sit with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I'm not hiring a designer per se to like give me the overarching vision and help me find every single piece and put it all together, because I enjoy that. Mm-hmm. I can understand why that would be like super helpful. And I really value that. And I have designers that I watch and, you know, love what they do. It would take a lot of the pain out of the process for me. And I'm sure I would like make less, you know, mistakes, quote unquote. But I also don't know if there are mistakes as long as it's like working for me and, you know, functional, beautiful, like makes me feel good, makes my family feel good and all of that. Okay, so you'd mentioned like wanting to, like having this bigger vision for Level Fields.
Oh, right.
Can you talk about what that is and what your dream for this is?
Yes, thank you for asking, because I'm down in the kind of in the weeds, like trying to build a website. And it's hard to remember those bigger things that are driving me. My vision for what's starting out as little me doing Level Fields design is something like a coalition. I see this coalition of people who are like-minded that really want to see good design here in Tacoma and are willing to put some skin in the game. So getting architects, getting engineers on board who could be a part of, you know, as consultants. And then since my ideal client is one who has a DIY spirit, as I like to say, is resourceful and willing to think outside the box and try things, you know, having retired maybe electricians, plumbers, contractors, people who would be willing to come in and just consult with my clients, you know, maybe they know a little bit or they know nothing, but they feel like they're probably able to like build that IKEA cabinet, or maybe they can take out this wall and frame up a new one, and just need someone to hold their hand and come in and look at it with them and talk them through it once or twice, you know. I know my husband and I have remodeled our house, and there were times when we wished we had a friend that could help us with that. Just builds a lot of confidence. So I would love to have people like that on the team, and just to bring the that sense of we can do this, we can make it work with what we have. And I just love that. You know, coordinating efforts with like architectural salvage yards, and I really want to be a good steward of our resources, and so I would love to partner with local salvage yards all in the area, and making use of their products and working together. And and then I think I mentioned earlier the next level for me. I want to take good design to the disenfranchised and the marginalized and the communities of people who really need like nitty gritty help. Mm-hmm. And those people and the people who serve them are stuck in survival mode. And but they deserve the value that good design brings to their lives as well. And, you know, how much more generous and giving could these organizations that are helping the homeless, helping people coming out of addiction, they could be so much more generous in their giving if the space itself was embracing and welcoming. And, you know, I mean, that's why I do what I do. Your space around you communicates to you who and what you are, good or bad. So if your space is just fluorescent lights and plastic bucket seats and it's white and there's VCT on the floor, that space is communicating to you, you know, you're just here to move through the line and, you know, and then move on, please. Could these spaces be more humane and more loving? Yes.
I love that so much. And I mean, I think what you're saying is that beauty is essential.
It is.
Ultimately, beauty is essential.
It's not the soul.
Yeah,
you can feed us. You need to feed us and water us.
You can survive. But... you can survive. And of course, like people who are transitioning out of homelessness, or, you know, in a situation like under the umbrella that you're describing, you know, I'm sure the color of their duvet is not the first thing on their mind, you know, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Of course, you have to have your basic needs met. However, like how much more life-giving would it be as, say, a single mom of several kids who's been living in her car and is like going to school and making changes and has an apartment that's been, you know, given to her through one of these organizations, to actually feel like my home is a safe space that reflects who I am and I enjoy it. And it's beautiful and it works. We don't have our stuff in plastic bags. We have like furniture that,
is appropriate and just basic design things, right? Yes, like it doesn't have to be over the top. Like we're not talking about high end things, but just that something that's aesthetically pleasing, that's functional. And yeah, I love that vision because it does reinforce that idea that beauty is essential. And it kind of comes back to that idea I mentioned earlier, like of shalom. And I think anytime you're beautifying anything, you know, it's an act of shalom, whether it's in your house or in the community, in your yard, the way that you interact with, you know, your neighbors walking by, but then like it has these ripple effects. I think that type of intention and any kind of good design has ripple effects outward, right?
Yeah, because if you are being fed by this beautiful quality of the space around you, then you are more full and you are more refreshed. You are, you know, the space is communicating to you, you know, I'm worth it. And I am loved, honestly. Like good design says that. And then so how much more joyful are you going to be as you leave that space, as you go out in the world?
Right. If you have a place of peace and refuge to operate from, then you can kind of get refilled and then go offer yourself in service.
Yeah.
I think that's huge.
And you know what? I forgot to mention the first time around when we did this. Are you going to tell your audience that we did this once already?
Yeah, this is our part two of the conversation that didn't get recorded.
That's probably good for me to do.
Yeah.
But I forgot to mention another thing that I am passionate about that Level Fields Design, I hope, will get to. Is more efficient use of space. Now that's within one, you know, a single family home as well. But in the greater sense, in the urban community sense, is, you know, how many homes are bigger than they need to be? How many people actually need a place to stay? There's a wonderful organization here in Tacoma called Shared Housing Services that acts as this middle kind of middleman between those who need space and those who have space, and they connect these two together. And that is my kind of my first step, I'm feeling like, is working with organizations like that. And, you know, it's very likely that someone, let's say an older retired couple, has that space and can accept, you know, a student, a young person who needs a home, or an elderly person. That's another category they work with, is elderly folks that aren't ready for a nursing home, but just don't want to live alone. Well, there's going to need to be alterations to the space to make it accessible to someone new to welcome into their house. And I just love that. Yeah. You know, we live in this city and it could always be more dense. And I think urban density is really important. And if it's done well and beautiful, then there is space for all of us. And it's still a lovely place to be. I think people get scared of this idea of these dense.
Yeah, well, that's a big conversation in Tacoma right now because of the housing shortage, for sure. Yeah. And so, I know there are a lot of neighbors who are like, not in my neighborhood, you know. And
I'd love to show people a beautiful Dadu.
Yes, Dadu.
Just a detached accessory dwelling unit.
Right.
But yeah, I'm passionate about that. Like,
yeah, that makes so much sense.
Let's convert parts, you know, homes that already exist, and let's make it work for two families or taking in folks. And
We're housing a lot of people in our house right now.
We sure are. That's great. You have
and we have the space.
You have the space.
I can't imagine not using it for other people, honestly.
Right.
You know, like that would be weird.
Right. And not everyone's like that. But
yeah, of course.
As part of my coalition, I want to get the word out there. Like, hey, we can live together and we can make it work. And everyone can be comfortable. Yeah. I mean, I'm a hippie, really, down at heart.
Yeah. Okay. One last question for you.
Okay.
Tell me three of your favorite things right now.
Three of my favorite things. Things that I'm loving right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first one is the same as the last time we did this, and that is my new dog, my puppy, Agnes.
Yes.
And she's about, what is she, 3 months old now?
Oh, goodness.
And she's already probably 25 pounds, and I am smitten.
I love it.
I spend really large portions of the day just petting her, and we look into each other's eyes.
Yeah,
and
well, it as is you should.
Really wonderful.
Yeah.
And hallelujah, it doesn't appear that I have allergies to her. So that's why we have the golden doodle, and we had to go that route for my allergies. So Agnes, the golden doodle, is the first one. And then I have just discovered John Batiste's newest album, called We Are. I think it's a 2020 release.
Okay.
And
oh, I'm always looking for good new
music. My gosh. Okay. It's like one of those perfect albums.
Oh, I love that.
It's
we don't listen to albums anymore.
I know, but I am trying to do that.
Yeah. She's always like, I prefer listening to the whole album.
Yes, good for
it's
her.
It's an experience, a curated experience, a designed experience. I'm like, yeah, you're right.
I know, and I really miss the 90s when you would save up your money from your dumb job
and go to the record store and try
a few seconds of each of the tracks.
Oh my gosh, I can't imagine how many hours I spent doing that.
And then you get the album, you select it, you bring it home, and you're taking
the liner notes.
Yes,
and that was a huge part of the experience.
How did this band choose to present themselves?
Oh, yeah,
what are they saying?
I miss that.
I mean, that is a sadness to me that we don't have that experience anymore.
It's true. Now I'm like, whatever comes up in my Spotify feed, and they just feed you like this, or maybe I don't. I don't know. I don't have time.
Yeah.
I don't have hours to stand in a record store anymore.
No, we don't. I almost feel like there should be some kind of music sharing app amongst friends or something.
I think we can just Apple Music is doing that.
Okay.
And all
I'm sure it already exists. I'm
all
super
the music
behind
apps, like you can share, you can like follow your friends.
Okay, maybe I'm just saying maybe our friend group should share with each other.
Right, let's do it.
Because
I always ask my kids and my family, like, please make me a playlist for you know Mother's Day, Valentine's Day, Christmas, my birthday. Like
just new music. It's something
new,
fresh. Well,
like things
check
that other people think I would like. That's such a gift. Okay, I will. Thank you for the recommendation.
Perfect.
Okay,
he's like a jazz. I honestly don't know all that much about him. I haven't followed him for a long time, but he's like a jazz pianist, classic. I mean, he's everything. He's an incredible soul and individual. Well, he just won whatever the music one is for this
ringing a bell. This is ringing a bell.
Soul, the movie Soul.
Yes, he did. The soundtrack.
The score, I think is what it's
score,
called.
Right.
And I think he won an award for it as well. He should have.
No, he's incredible.
And so this new album is like, he's from New Orleans, so it's part New Orleans, it's part hip-hop, it's part jazz, piano, it's just
sold.
All the
I'm
things.
Done.
Yeah,
I'm going to go listen.
We Are. It's amazing.
Okay.
So that's the second thing. And then the third thing is, at the risk of sounding like a commercial, it's my air fryer.
Oh, yeah.
Got an air fryer.
Right. You were singing its praises the other day.
Yes, because we're trying to, we're never going to be 100% vegan because cheese. Yeah.
And
eggs.
Because cheese.
Cheese
say no
eggs.
More. Say no more.
And but we are trying to cut down as many animal products that we eat as possible. And when we do have animal products.
I did that for 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks.
But now Justin's doing it again.
Right. Yeah.
I have some.
Oh, if the whole family's not bought in, that's
tricky.
Well,
I know.
Yeah, exactly. But so
air fryer.
Being vegan, like we're doing a lot of, I've discovered a really good recipe for like a fake chicken nugget thing.
Oh.
And you know, a lot of tofu, a lot of tempeh. And oh my gosh, you just toss that stuff in there, a little bit of oil, and it doesn't take very long either.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like a little bit small, but like you can do two batches, no problem. So just last night I made a stir fry, and you can just over there, you got your air fryer going, and it does not heat up the whole kitchen like your oven would. It gets up to 400 in like 1 minute, and then you fry up your tofu and it's perfectly crispy. No more spattering oil all over the kitchen. And oh my gosh.
Okay.
And where like the one side gets nicely toasted, but the other side just breaks.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, tofu. I love it, but it's really hard to cook.
It
so
is
the air
to
fryer
cook.
Totally is great.
But you have to press it first, yeah.
Still, I bought a tofu press too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So
okay, this is two
twofer.
In one.
It's a twofer.
Air fryer plus tofu press.
Yep.
Okay, these are a few of Tori's favorite things.
And I may or may not have just made my own individual personal tater tot breakfast casserole for breakfast this morning because the air fryer. You can just put in as many tater tots as you want, girl. And like six. Oh, well, I love tater tots. I really, really do. And I've just realized you can have like a couple of eggs. I had some like leftover pesto and like crumble of.
You could do a little frittata.
Goat cheese. And I did some onion, like.
Whatever veggies are in the bottom of your
just throw it on there with an egg on top and you can do it because it only took you 6 minutes to make you know the 12 tater tots that you wanted.
I love that.
So air fryer.
All right. Okay, sold.
Yep, you're welcome.
Oh well, thank you for all of it.
You're
the
welcome.
Tater tot tips and all the design talk, and I love your vision. I'm super excited and proud of you, and I can't wait to see what happens.
Me too.
Yeah, I know. It's just all, you're doing the next right thing. And
yes, thank you.
And you're doing it. You're doing it, Tori.
Is this what it feels like to be doing it?
Okay. I know, okay. Right? Okay. I always have to remind myself, like, remember 3 years ago, you said you wanted to be doing this. Well, now you're doing it.
Now I'm doing it.
So now what?
Yep.
How do you feel? You know?
Yeah. A little scattered, but I'm still taking my steps.
You're doing it.
Every time I can, I take a step.
Good job. Well, I can't wait to share this conversation because I think you're doing good work. And these are important things to think about. And yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, friend. Bye.
Goodbye.
Friends, thank you so much for listening. It means so, so much to me. And I want to throw out there that I really would like to be interviewing more women and talking about their journeys into this new phase of life after raising kids, or women who are maybe in the middle of it and who are still trying to figure out, like, well, what do I do with my life? Basically, who am I now that my kids are getting older? And all of those questions that we've been talking about to some degree on this podcast. So if you are in that place, or you know women who are in that place, who are exploring this whole new landscape of life and identity and purpose and vocation beyond motherhood, please reach out to me. I would love to talk to you. I'd love to just hear your story and share your story, because I think there's so much power and beauty and goodness in sharing our stories with each other, and we can inspire each other and we can encourage each other. And when we can share different perspectives and hear different perspectives, it just really makes the path so much less lonely. So feel free to reach out to me. And even if that's not you and you're not in that place, I would still love to hear feedback from you and hear what you think about this podcast and what we should talk about next. We've kind of been in this, like, I guess it's sort of a de facto series on all things home, because that's where I am right now. And that's what I'm immersed in, but it's all connected. So, and you know, we are part of the whole vision for this podcast was also like, what does it mean to be an adult? And these are all adulting things. So anyway, I'd love to hear from you. Send me an email, send me an Instagram message, send me a text, and let's keep this going and get some momentum. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this conversation. If you enjoyed it and know a friend who would love it, please, please, please pass it on. Word of mouth is how we can grow this community. Thanks again.